Ida Deer is a Menominee woman. Her mother told her, "You were put on this earth for a purpose. You are here to help people. You are here to help your people." So she did. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. And here in our studio is the woman herself, Ida Deer. This hour, we're talking about American Indian rights, what's happened in the past, what's going on now, and how Ida Deer has played a role in it over decades. Join our conversation, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Indigenous civil rights leader Ida Deer? What do you want to know about how the federal government has a relationship with tribal leaders? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Ida Deer was the first woman to serve as the head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and she's out with a new memoir. It's written with Theda Perdue, and it's called Making a Difference, My Fight for Native Rights and Social Justice. Ada, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure and honor to be on this program.
And you're here for the hour with us, and we so appreciate that. We're going to explore a lot of different aspects of the work that you've done over the years. I do, though, wonder if you can help us understand what motivates you. What's pushed you to do so much?
Well, starting with my mother, I didn't know quite what she meant. I was under 10 when she gave me my lifelong goals. And it took me quite a while to be able to follow those directions. But help was not a foreign concept to me because I'm the oldest of five children. We lived on the Menominee Indian Reservation in a log cabin on the banks of the beautiful Wolf River, where I absorbed the love of the land, love for the animals, love for my tribal people. And of course, when you're that young and growing up, you don't understand quite what's happening to you. All of us are born into certain families, and the environment we think is the way it is. But later on, you understand that there are many different people on the planet with many different ways of life and perspectives and so on. And when I got into high school, I really started understanding more about the outside world. And living on the reservation was an excellent experience for me because there were my tribe there, and we went to a number of the events on the reservation. I particularly remember the pageant, which was held in the Woodland Bowl. It's the most beautiful powwow bowl surrounded by the beautiful tall trees of the reservation. And I didn't know what the pageant was about, but it had something to do with Hiawatha. And also they talked about Gichigumi and Gichigami, and I liked the sound of the words, but I didn't know what it meant. And we just enjoyed the pageant. Almost every year they put on a pageant, and over the years it has declined, and now they're trying to revive those performances.
Well, certainly we've seen, you know, ebbs and flows in many different sections of Native culture, sometimes because of habits and also sometimes because of people from outside the reservation, mm-hmm. You know, trying to change things. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to talk about the Menominee Restoration Act of 1973. Mm-hmm. I mean, but first we have to go back to 1954 with the Menominee Termination Act. What was happening in the 1950s when that got lawmakers interested in terminating these tribal governments?
Well, this country still doesn't know what to do with people of color. And I like to spread the information. I've learned a lot about the history of Indians and so on, but at that point in time, it was up to me to learn. And I started reading various books, and I got really depressed because of the cruelty and the hardships that Indian people across the land were subjected to. And I didn't know that I was depressed at that time, but I was so angry. My teachers and my mother noticed this, and they said, "Well, Ada Deer, what's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I am really angry and I'm upset about the treatment," and I would tell them what book I had been reading, and about the massacres and the stealing of the land and the broken treaties and, you know, all those things. And no one was really there to give me a full understanding of that. But my mother came from a Quaker family, and she practiced her Quaker life. But she didn't tell me that. I learned that, you know, many years later. And I have great respect for the Quakers. They are not trying to convert you to their religion. If you want to be a Quaker, you have to express that and learn something about the religion. At any rate, my mother always had a keen sense of right and wrong. There's only rights. There's only wrongs, and there's no in between. Well, I discovered
very stark. That's the answer. Uh-huh.
And then, of course, I learned that Indians weren't the only people that were oppressed. I started learning some things about women. Now, this was in the 50s. I graduated from high school in 1953, so this was before all the activism of the 60s, and that, I think, was really important in helping me understand the oppression of black people in the South. There weren't any blacks on the reservation at that time. Now we do have a few people that have intermarried with black people. At any rate, there's also more intermarriage with white people in all the three tribes that are in the same area, the Stockbridge Munsee, the Oneidas, and the Menominees. So my world was expanding, and I thought that it was wrong to have all of those people discriminated against and suffer the policies that they'd had no part in developing. And so then I became a social worker, and that was the wonderful profession for me, because they're devoted to social justice. They're the only profession that has social justice as a core value. But when the Restoration Act was passed in 1954, it was finalized in 1961, almost nobody knew what the consequences were. This was passed by the U.S. government. There was one senator who really pushed this, and it started with the lawsuit that the tribe brought against the federal government for mismanagement of the tribal resources. That's one of the responsibilities of the government for Indian people and Indian resources. They're supposed to protect the people from, all the wrongs that have happened. At any rate, there was a big blowdown, and lots of timber was lost, but the superintendent of the BIA, and many reservations had superintendents who had vast powers. And because they didn't want the white people or in the surrounding area to suffer and have the competition of the lumber from that blowdown, the tribe wasn't able to sell and rescue the timber. So all that timber was lost, and we're talking about a lot. The Great Lakes tribes have timber. We have the biggest forest in the state with under tribal supervision. And people from across the world come to see how we manage this beautiful forest. So it's a treasure for our people. It's a basic to our identity. And when they passed the Termination Act, the land became subject to taxation, the tribal roads were closed, our hospital was closed. It was a cultural, economic, and political disaster.
And let's jump in right there. Hang on just a moment. Ada Deer is with us this hour talking about her memoir, and our conversation continues right here on The Morning Show in just a moment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina, and we're talking with Ada Deer, who is an activist, a former leader of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and we're having a discussion about her life as a proud Menominee woman. And we're going to pick up the conversation as we left it, where we're talking about the Menominee Restoration Act and the role that timber played in that. Ada, take us back there. You know, we've just talked about how the timber area is revered. What happened next?
Well, first of all, I'd like to make a correction. It's the Menominee Termination Act we're
Termination
talking about
Act.
Right
Thank
now.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
At any rate, our people lived forever here in Wisconsin. We didn't come from anywhere else. We're the only original indigenous group that is here on our own land. Over a series of treaties, we ceded away millions of acres of land. In return, we kept the reservation. It was 235,000 acres then, and it's now been diminished. We were the first tribe terminated. We were the first tribe restored. Now, just let me say that in termination, we were no longer a federally recognized tribe. It was a cultural, economic, political disaster, which would take more time than we have to explain. But our people suffered greatly. We had a hospital that we paid the expenses of the nuns who were running it. We also paid expenses of some expenses of the Bureau of Indian Affairs personnel. And so everybody thought we were rich. Well, no, we were rich in timber, and we have a beautiful Wolf River and beautiful lakes on our land. And we were federally recognized tribe from 1854 to 1954. And so this was a big shock to everybody. The state didn't know what it was. The feds didn't know what it was. But we have many people in Washington who get the ideas. They don't consult the people, and they just pass laws, and then the people suffer. So when I learned about this, my mother was very active. She wrote letters protesting this. And she told me that I had to do this. Well, I said, well, Mom, I don't know anything yet. I'm a college student, and I have to learn more. And so fast forward over time, I got my bachelor's degree from UW-Madison. I'm very proud to be an alum of this fabulous university, and gave me an excellent education. And also from this Columbia University School of Social Work, I got an excellent social work education with its emphasis on social justice. But knowing all of that, I still had to persevere. And I decided that when I learned that the tribal people were protesting the land sales, they abolished the tribal government too. They imposed a state corporation called Menominee Enterprises, Inc. Now, nobody knew what a corporation was, least of all the Menominees. They knew that it was an important structure, but they didn't understand it. Well, anyway, long story short, then, all this land, 235,000 acres, were subject to taxation. Now, a small Indian tribe with a lumber mill could not provide all those monies. And so the thing got involved. They got involved with selling land. And when I said selling land, the protest then started. And I was in Stevens Point, at UW Stevens Point at the time. And so I came up to the reservation twice to look at, to understand, and to take part in these protests against land sales. And I started really to think about this. See, the university education enables you to think if you're awake and paying attention. And so I said, well, I'm not going to stand for this. I got to do something. And I would like to point out that anyone can do whatever they are interested in and make a difference. I really like the title of my book, Making a Difference. And so long story short, I decided that, first of all, I had to figure out what it was. I found a Judicare lawyer, this was one of the programs established in the 50s to abolish poverty. Well, we didn't abolish poverty. It was a skirmish, not a battle. At any rate, I had a couple sessions with him because I didn't understand what termination was either. And then he told me, this was Mr. Joseph Prolasnik, who was a lawyer interested in helping low-income people and people who are the underdogs. And so he told me then that once I got a handle on this, that other Menominees had come, but they soon disappeared. And we had this long discussion about what could be done. I said, well, they're selling our land. Our people are suffering. The hospital is closed. It's a terrible, terrible impact on our people. So he said, well, it's a federal law. I said, okay, I know that. It's a federal law. I said, is there any other way that can be utilized to do something to stop all of this. And he was thinking out loud, too. And he said, well, and I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, if it's a federal law, then we have to have another federal law to undo it. And he said, yes. So, of course, I'm a very forceful person.
I like it.
And I'm accustomed to speaking up and speaking out. There's another little book that got published earlier,
right.
Speaking Up. Speaking out. At any rate, so that's how it all got started. I want to emphasize the role of the people. This started as a grassroots movement of the Menominee people protesting the land sales. The corporation got into a contact with a land developer, and pretty soon white people were coming in, buying land lots. And then I thought about that, and I said, pretty soon the Menominees are going to be strangers in their own land. And this is our land. So we started, and to make another long story short, we started meeting. And I said, well, and it wasn't just me. We had groups of Menominees in Milwaukee and Chicago. They ended up there because of termination. They had a white superintendent was named to oversee and direct the lumber mill. And the first thing he did was fire 150 men. That was 150 families who then had no source of income. And so they had to go to Milwaukee and Chicago. Let me say that in the 50s, there were three policies. One was termination, and over a period of time, over 100 people, 100 tribes were terminated. Some were able to be restored later on, but others were not, which is very sad. And then there was Public Law 280, which is too much to go into here, but it gave civil and criminal jurisdiction over the tribes, which was very, very harmful to the tribes. And it still exists, and some tribes are subject to it still. So we had termination, and we had relocation, and Public Law 280. The idea was that give the Indians opportunity to go to the cities for a better life. And some did. This was a national program. There were centers in a number of cities around the nation. And some people stayed, and some people they went back because the city life was not what they wanted, and they longed for living on the reservation.
Ada Deer is a member of the Wisconsin Menominee Tribal Nation, served as Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Indian Affairs in the Clinton administration. And we're wondering, have you advocated for tribal sovereignty? Are you a non-Native person who spent time alongside the tribes? What have you learned? 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the conversation. Let's go ahead and welcome Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning. It's a privilege to speak with you. So when I was 9, my great-grandma Busha gave me a similar mandate. She told me to go out and love humanity, love people, and to help them. That being said, as a Caucasian male, what can I do? What can other people who are concerned do to help Native American issues, specifically starting with the Menominee?
Marcus, thank you for that question. Not a whole lot of time to answer it. I'm sure there's quite a long answer, but not a whole lot of time. What strikes you first, Ada?
Well, first of all, thank you for calling in and offering to help. Help is a very complicated process, and there are many ways to help. One way is to provide finances. Even if they're a small amount of money, there's the NARF, Native American Rights Fund, which is the NAACP for Indians. They were formed back in about 1970, and so they are a law firm based in Colorado of both Indians and others, and they are devoted to preserving tribal existence and to helping tribes confront the bad policies and the bad laws of the states as well as the federal government, and they have made a big difference. We made contact with them, and they have helped us a great deal. Now, in terms of individuals, there are fundraisers that go on for various causes. You could give to scholarships that have been established by a number of entities. There's American Indian College Fund and others. So scholarships is one way.
Mm, but because also, then it's access to that education that, you know, that you've already pointed to. Absolutely. Ada Deer, a woman of many firsts, is with us this hour. She taught American Indian Studies at UW-Madison. She held a fellowship at Harvard, worked for the Native American Rights Fund. There's room for you in this conversation with her about social justice and Native American rights. Do you remember her 1992 campaign for Congress or when she led the Bureau of Indian Affairs? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina, and this is The Morning Show right here on the Ideas Network. This morning on the Ideas Network, join us for live coverage as the House Judiciary Committee takes the next step in the impeachment inquiry. Coverage begins at 8. Attorneys for Democrats and Republicans on the Intelligence Committee are testifying about evidence against President Trump. That's live coverage of public impeachment inquiry hearings this morning, starting at 8 o'clock here on the Ideas Network and also online at WPR.org. Right now, it's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. American Indians protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline in recent years called themselves water protectors. They use the phrase, water is life. Ada Deer grew up without running water in her home, but she says she woke up to the sound of the river here. She's a member of the Menominee tribe, and we're discussing her life's work restoring and ensuring sovereignty for tribal nations. Ada, what is it about your Menominee identity that you want other people to understand?
That's a long question, to, and it deserves a longer answer. Well, speaking as a member of the tribe and just as a human being, why can't we all get along, as Mr. King mentioned? And the problems of racism and poverty are very, very serious, and it needs to be put in a larger context, and I'll get to the water. But there are over 500 tribes in this country, and the anthropologists and others have divided and made categories. So these are the Algonquin tribal people. That's the overall category. We hunt, we fished, we gathered wild rice, and we lived peacefully in general. The people out in the west on the Columbia River, they're fishing Indians. And the salmon and the water are very important for their sustenance and also to their identity. For example, when the salmon come, first salmon comes, they have a salmon feast to thank the salmon for giving them nourishment and helping them survive. So also, there are two foundational documents that mention Indians. One is the U.S. Constitution. Twice, once in the Commerce Clause and once in the Treaty Clause, they talk about Indians. And they say various things, which we don't have time to go into right now. And also, the fact that we have a government-to-government relationship, most people don't understand. Oh, they think we're just little groups of people that are kind of there and maybe sometimes cluttering up what they want to do. But we are governments. We are not clubs or oddities. We are the first people here. We lived for thousands of years. I'm talking about all the people now, all the indigenous people. And then change came with the Europeans coming and so on and so on. So people need to understand that. So now, in terms of water, water is essential to life. And in case people don't know this, there are going to be water wars across the planet because of the change now being produced by the climate change. And this is from a long issue of the National Geographic. So water is important to all of us, and we need to protect it and to utilize it wisely. And so when you grow up hearing the sounds of the water rippling, and some of the river overflows and it gets on the land, which is good. I've spent many times swimming in the Wolf River right off the banks there. And there are lakes. It was fun to go to the lakes, and people still enjoy the river and the lakes. And we get wonderful fish out of both waters. And so it's essential. And there are water protectors that have gotten into prominence now, because this is part of the ethics of the tribes. Protect the land, protect the resources, do it in balance. Don't take all the wild rice. Don't take all the fish out. Don't kill all the animals, which is a tendency of the people in the dominant society. They want to get rid of and make it more efficient and so on and so on. So it is part of the identity that most Native people are exposed to, and some people more or less, because lots of our people don't live on the reservations anymore. They live in the cities. But guess what? There's the moccasin telegraph. And so people come up to the reservation for their relatives' celebrations and for tribal celebrations, and they maintain ties. Being a part of a tribe is a wonderful experience. And it's your people. You are part of it. You are connected. And in my opinion, one of the problems in our total society is people don't feel connected or responsible for each other. And that's very sad.
Let's bring Madeline from Green Bay into this conversation with Ada Deer. Madeline, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. I've heard a lot about you. I wish I could meet you. I'm sure you've heard of my aunt, Irene Metoxin Moore.
Oh, yes. She was a great leader of your tribe.
Yes. Well, I am.
The Oneidas.
So much, yes. And Irene Metoxin Moore was my aunt. I grew up just a short walk away. Our farm was located next to her farm. And so much corruption has taken over in our tribe. And there's nothing those of us who are trying to fight against it seem to be able to do because of our sovereignty and the ability of our tribal leaders to pay off the politicians. And we had a whistleblower on mass stealing from our HUD program that went on for at least 30 years. Mm-hmm. And she was blacklisted. Smeared by someone in the police department who was a buddy of the person who was doing that. And I don't know what we can do.
Yeah, Madeline, thank you for that question, because, you know, tribal government is like any other sort of leadership or government system. It's certainly not simply a tribal government issue, but people can have ulterior motives. How do you fight corruption?
Well, that is a national problem. So, first of all, you have to decide if you want to get involved. Okay, then you have to do your homework. What do you want to happen? What are you working on? And you have to understand. I remember asking Mrs. Roosevelt this question when I was at a leadership program as a college kid, and she came and she supported the encampment for citizenship. Now, this was established after World War II, when people were very concerned about what could be done, and people there decided we need to educate the youth. So you have to get a good education, and you have to be able to analyze some of the problems and see what the solutions are. Now, I don't know enough about your particular problem, but you need probably to get a lawyer, but that's not the only thing. You have to have more people involved. And you can start it. That's why I like the title to my book, Making a Difference. You can find other people that are concerned about this, and you can develop some solutions. Maybe you can vote some of those people out of office. Maybe you can bring some legal action. I mean, I don't know enough about it, but I know that every tribe has problems, and some of the problems are due to the fact that they have outdated constitutions. Many of the tribes are still operating under the IRA, Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, when the then Commissioner of Indian Affairs decided that they should be more democratic, because different tribes have different ways of their governance. Some are inherited chieftains ships and other ways. At any rate, these outdated constitutions are a hindrance, and it's a lot of work to do this. And this is what we did, and I want to get some words in on restoration. Restoration, it says to repeal the termination, repeal. And I don't know under what categories these people are conducting the practices that you're questioning. So it's a long haul, but you do have tribal members that are lawyers, and you have very knowledgeable people throughout your tribal government there and throughout your tribal communities. I just recently saw a documentary on Wisconsin Public Television, and it talked about and showed the farm that you have, which is wonderful. So I can't answer all aspects of your question because I don't have the information. But I would encourage you to take responsibility for your tribe. Many people don't vote, and this irks me no end. And I want to say that the whole country needs to get involved in the government. Half the people don't vote, and thousands of people have died across the world and in our own country just for the right to vote. And it's a precious right, and people should be informed. Don't just listen to some people telling you what to do. Use your own brain, as my mother used to always tell me. Use your brain, Ada dear. Don't ask me. I was just being an obedient child. I'd say, Mom, can I do this? Can I do that? She said, what are you asking me that about? What are you asking me about that for? Use your brain. So I find some more people and then get involved. You have to pay a price for this. People are not going to be happy about it. Maybe too many people are corrupted. I don't know. So I would encourage you to do your tribal responsibility, and I want to tell that to everybody. Tribal people, Americans, do your citizenship duties. Vote.
It's easy to say. Sometimes it's harder to do to take responsibility for that community because it's hard. It just is. So I appreciate that. And thank you so much, Madeline, for asking that question and for being willing to share your story. We'll continue this conversation with Ada Deer here on The Morning Show. She was the first Native American woman to run for Congress in 1992, former leader of the BIA, also, a very proud Menominee woman who is willing to share her story from the very beginning with us. I'm Keely Boltina. Do you live near a reservation or on the reservation? What's the significance of your community? Join in at 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show right here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Ada Deer has spent her entire life learning and advocating for Native Americans. That is, from her time being a college professor to learning on her own to her position in federal and tribal governments. And we're spending time reflecting with Ada as she's written a new memoir along with Theda Perdue. And there's a line for you. What questions do you have for Indigenous civil rights leader Ada Deer? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Ada, we need to get to this concept of restoration. For people unfamiliar, help define this. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about here?
Well, the people were suffering. The land was being sold. The white people were moving in. And I knew enough about history to say, no, this is wrong. And then,
because you could see where it was going.
Oh, yeah. We would be strangers in our land. And I wasn't willing to allow that. And so you have to have some confidence in yourself, and you have to understand that one person can do something. Now, I decided that I was going to fight for the land. And people always ask, well, what is the Indian problem? Like there's only one problem and there's only one Indian. It's always about land and people. There's the book called Freedom with Reservation, the first book dealing with my tribe, the Termination. And the Termination Act said we were no longer a federally recognized tribe, and we would be removed from the supervision and protection of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the U.S. government. And that was a real break in the trust that the people had put in the government when the treaties were signed. So at any rate, there's a lot of misinformation about all that. And I would put everybody, if I were running the world, I'd put everybody in everybody would have to go back to school and learn something more about their history, their culture, whoever they are and wherever they were. At any rate, so termination was a disaster. Let's put it that way. And people really suffered. Okay. So then we started the movement to protest. We protested first. And one of the actions taken by those in power, by the tribal enterprise and by the trustees, they gave us a whole new structure, which nobody understood. But they took away the power of the individual people and the power of the tribal government.
So they told just abolished you, do it the tribal way.
Government. They abolished right. mm-hmm. the tribal government. Okay, and the corporation was there, and we also voted to become. And this happened under the state. We're a county. We're the newest county, the 72nd county. Well, at any rate, so we were going to protest. And we did protest, but the people were so afraid of us that they deputized 50 people to protect whatever, right? They didn't say that, but they – and then – so we started going from Kashina up to Legend Lake, which is a very short distance. It's probably less – no more than a mile. And then we saw these guys standing on both – in line on both sides of our route. And so I thought, well, what is this? Well, then I started to recognize them. So I said, well, hello, Joe. And I raised my hand and smiled at them. And we were supposed to be silenced and cowed, you know. And
it was intimidation.
Yeah, they were going to intimidate us. And I said, what is this? You know, so then other people also started talking to them. And nothing happened. I mean, so we faced a lot of opposition when we first started. So you can't just say people are going to or feel that people are going to support you and say, oh, I'm glad you're doing that. No, they're not, because change takes time. I forgot to finish my point about Eleanor Roosevelt. We visited her. She was at the UN at that point, the UN Commission on Human Rights. She was the chair of that committee at that time. And at any rate, I took a workshop at this leadership training I took this workshop there, and I asked her about South Africa. I said, well, Mrs. Roosevelt, what about South Africa? Well, first of all, the 100 of us were there at the Roosevelt Estate, and we had box lunches, and we ate on the lawn, and it was a beautiful, beautiful setting. And so then she gave us her wonderful lecture, and she looked at all of us, was really smiling at us, and was very respectful, and of course, this just awed everybody. But at the end of her lecture, she said, well, do you have any questions? Well, I'm looking around. Nobody's raising their hands. So, of course, I had to ask a question. And I asked, because I went to a desegregation workshop, because I didn't know anything about segregation, desegregation. And I learned a lot. And so then I said, Mrs. Roosevelt, what about South Africa? Apartheid was started about 1948 or so. And they actually, the government there, sent people over here to understand and learn more about how our country had dealt with the Indians. So I thought that that was interesting. They had to come over here to learn how to oppress their own people. Of course, that infuriated me. So at any rate, she said to my question of what to do about South Africa, they're oppressing people, they're hurting people. And she said, well, what? And I said, well, what about the UN? Should they throw them out or what? And she said, well, first of all, you have to understand that change takes time. And here I am at 84 years old, what I heard from Eleanor Roosevelt in the early 20s, when I was 22 or so, when I went there as a college kid. At any rate, she said, change takes time. Violence is not the answer. Education is the way. So those are very wise words. And she made a remarkable contribution not only to our country but to the world. And so I revere her, and we still need her guidance. She's being quoted right now in some of the papers on some of the issues. So I'm getting away from my topic here. Now, well, let's see, what else were we talking about? Restoration.
Yes.
Okay. So we said then we had meetings about well, how are we going to do this once they understood that we had to get a federal law? So being a social worker, and I'm proud to be a social worker, and if there weren't a social work profession, they'd have to invent another profession similar to the social workers. So I want to applaud my profession because they gave me skills and opportunities to be an effective social worker. At any rate, the Menominees helped develop their own legislation, and the lawyers listened. And we had meetings in Chicago and Milwaukee, and finally we were able to have meetings on the reservation. And we also got bad press by the people in power. They had the connections with the press. We were the troublemakers and agitators and so on and so on. And so people were starting to find out what we were doing. So we wanted to save our land. We wanted to save our people. And so that was the goal. And this was going to be done through the federal law, the Restoration Act. And so we then asked, we went through this whole process again of asking the grassroots people what they wanted in their Restoration Act. And so at first people were a little shy about me because I had been away so long. I went to college and then I went to graduate school and then I worked in Minneapolis at a different jobs. But then when I read about the demonstrations against the land sales, I said, I have to get involved. And so you have to decide what you're going to do. So then we developed the Restoration Act with the wonderful assistance of the lawyers, Joseph Prilosnick from Judicare and the Native American Rights Fund lawyers, Charles Wilkinson, and he's a law school professor, and Yvonne Knight, who's a Native person. I think she's from the Ponca tribe in Oklahoma. And we all together, and that's how it should be, worked to develop the Restoration Act that reflects the values and the sovereignty of our people. And so I feel that it's one of the most important things that I've done with my life is to, first of all, fight for, be part of that struggle and help people become knowledgeable about their tribal responsibilities and that they could help in bringing about significant change. And so that's a shorthand of restoration. One person, when I was talking with him before this, we were going around getting votes and signing proxies. At any rate, he said, you know, one day I'm an American Indian, and the next day I'm not, but I'm just me. And I said, well, that's what we're working for. You are an important person. You're a member of the tribe. And so we have to appeal to people's suffering and also their questions about all of this. So I was the lobbyist for my tribe in Washington, and that's another long story. But we couldn't have done this without the leadership of our congressional delegation, Senator Nelson, Senator Proxmire, David Obie, and
Yeah, you're speaking others. Some names that our listeners certainly understand. We so appreciate your time here this morning. Ada Deer was the first woman to serve as the head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And she's out with a new memoir. It's called Making a Difference, My Fight for Native Rights and Social Justice. It's The Morning Show.